I would like to call Gustav Macia, who works on the International Council of the World Social Forum.
And if you allow me to speak French, I know it's an effort for the jury, but it is the last one. Bien, donc la question qui est posée est évidemment très difficile.
Since decades that neither the government nor the international institutions are really ready to have the rights of the Palestinian people respected, what can we do? For what in reality, we need to come back to the strategy of the Brussels Tribunal and the People's Permanent Tribunals. Because the strategy consists exactly on trying to link the response to the emergency, that means the situation of the Palestinian people, to a perspective that is that of peace and justice. In order to do this, we maybe need to talk about the tribunals of opinion. In 1966, like Pierre Galland recalled, Bertrand Russell and Jean-Paul Sartre, also Lyndon Basso and Danilo Petit, created the Russell Tribunal on Vietnam. In 1964-76, they created a new Russell Tribunal on Latin America. And in 1979, Lelio Basso, with a certain number of people, created the Permanent Tribunal of People that was taken by movements and that elaborated 34 sentences. And since 1979, the question is still relevant. What are we doing? I'm sorry to say no, because I participated in several of these tribunals. And how can we manage to make the ideas that we were struggling for advance? From that perspective, the tribunal of opinion, tribunal, People's Tribunal, the Russell Tribunal, because Sigan Gauche that followed for such a long time what started, what Mr. Russell started, if finally, at the demand of Pierre Galland, Stéphane Hessel, Abel Achaïd, he accepts to remake a Russell Tribunal on Palestine, it is because he noticed of the symbolic role of Palestine in international law, and that he also notices also of another question that's very important, is the centrality of the Palestinian question in international law and in the world today. The tribunal, the permanent tribunal of people, the Russell Tribunal, come from the civil society, from the international civil society, is one of its manifestations. But in fact, it calls international civil society to implement the propositions and the sentences. I think that it's very important to understand this double movement. For the tribunal, for opinion tribunals, the perspective on the long term is to wait on international law. And the opinion tribunals managed. I'll just give you an example. For instance, the tribunal that met in Bhopal at the demand of the victims that hadn't been compensated accident, Union Carbide accident in italics, this tribunal emitted some proposals on the responsibility of multinationals in major ecological catastrophes that is today a base for the international debate on the responsibility of multinationals and the environment. So the tribunal has the possibility to advance international law in the long term, and it does. Why? Because it situates itself within the idea that confronts the economical powers, in front of the government powers, that citizen power must be constructed. That's the long-term perspective. But of course, it's not a strategy. It's a goal. The strategy, the immediate strategy, is to be able to serve those who struggle and resist. So, what the tribunal does, what we all the tribunals do, is to give sentences that can serve those who resist. So the question that we need to ask ourselves today is how do the sentences of the tribunal will help and serve those who resist, in this case, the Palestinian people. And from that perspective, I'm going to develop three very briefly propositions or analysis. The first one is the question of the mobilization of the Palestinian people, the movement of solidarity, international solidarity with the Palestinian people. That is the first that we'll be able to use the sentences in order to defend them in the public opinion, in order to weigh on the government and the decisions taken. And then I'm going to talk about the second dimension, is the renewal of the solidarity movement with the Palestinian people through the campaign of boycott, so the DDP solutions, for which the work of the tribunal can be very important. And third, I'm going to talk about of the centrality prolongment of the Palestinian question in the new period that is open, because it is there that we can extend and find alliances and renew the question of the resistance of the Palestinian people and link it with the other questions that are relevant in the world. Okay, on first point, first, we need to support the Palestinian movement in the West Bank, in Gaza, in the refugee camps. That's the first priority. So it is the priority that the international civil society gives itself. This term is not very good because there is no really international civil society. This is why, from our perspective, we talk more about movements than civil society, because it's the movements that carry dynamics and assert and proposals. So there are effectively, since 2001, new movements of solidarity with Palestinians that have given themselves for goal the reinforcement of the Palestinian movement and have converged towards Palestine all those who wanted to support the Palestinian movement, even being there physically, like between 2002 and 2004 with the mobilization for the siege of Baghdad and the flotilla that we talked earlier about, and also through all the movements of solidarity that support projects in Palestine, that support the possibility for Palestinian associations, for the civil society in Palestine to survive, resist, and be reinforced. The action is very visible in the processes, that is the one of the World Forum. You know, the Social World Forum is the convergence of social movements and social networks, network of different social movements. And effectively, these different movements have always supported the Palestinian movement. These are movements of human rights for in behalf for health, health, education, unions. From the first forum in Porto Alegre in 2001, the delegation of Palestinian movement was at the head of the manifestation, and since all these forums, the Palestinian movement have been at the head of the opening of these forums, and there are activities, assemblies, discussions around the Palestinian question. That is one of the major concerns. And there has been another event that is also very important, I think, and it is that the World Social Forums were mobilized with many Palestinian organizations, with all the civil society associations, the World Education Forum that was held in 2010, and it was the fact of having convened several hundreds of organizations from all over the world into Palestine in order to hold workshops, manifestations in Ramallah, Jenin, Bethlehem, Naplus, Tul Karem, Hebron, Jerusalem, Gaza, Nazareth, and Jaffa. That was one of the first international manifestations in the occupied territories. And like everybody knows here, because many of the people I see here are part of this civil society and other solidarity movements, how difficult it is to arrive all the way there. And there was this important event, considerable event. And I think that it can be one of the indications of how to support the Palestinian movement and show that the question, Palestinian question, is not being dissolved, and it's something that is going to continue from the 28th in Porto Alegre in 2012. There will be the World Social Forum called Free Palestine, for Free Palestine, organized by all the network of movements and this time including many unions, so you can all go. I hope this will be a very important moment. Also, after the global forum on the feminist forums in Palestinian, decided to organize a women education forum in Palestine to struggle against the occupation, the social struggles, and the struggles of women for their rights. And there will be also in Tunisia in March of 2003 in Tunis, during which we hope we will be able to present publicly and in a very solemn way the results of the Russell Tribunal of Palestine, because its conclusion should take place before this forum. So this is one of the first possibilities, the first ways of support to the Palestinian solidarity movement. Now I would like to insist on the campaign of boycott on investments, BDS. I'm not going to come back to the boycott. I think it's a citizen nonviolent action. It's an active that works as a revelator. Boycott responds to a situation of domination. Historically, historic has been very responsible, has helped boycott slavery, colonization, apartheid, discrimination. It's up to the tribunal and the session of the tribunal in Cape Town that Desmond Tutu declared that the boycott participated to the fight against apartheid and facilitate a non-violent transition. And in the case of the conflict of Israel and Palestine, the boycott could facilitate a non-violent solution. The campaign BDS opposes three elements that characterize the conflict between Palestine and the state of Israel. Occupation, colonization, and apartheid. These are the three questions that are being dealt with. And of these questions, the struggle is political. It's also an ideological struggle of ideas. The long struggle against apartheid in South Africa shows that the boycott should be part of a strategic perspective. The boycott is not a goal in itself. It's a way to fight. Boycott is first used to delegitimize the state of colonization and occupation. It also serves to sharpen contradictions. It was seen before in South Africa, India, and the United States, where the boycott exacerbate contradictions between in the national system and between companies. So boycott marked a certain number of successes. Société de Eolia company didn't have its contract renewed for the subway of Stockholm, many millions of dollars, and it didn't manage to get the renewal of the sanitation works in the London suburbs. So boycott can be a success, and I think that it's one of the campaigns that can put into question the way in which Israel is trying to build its image. And boycott, it also asks the question to the Israeli society about the future they want to choose. So we need to come back to these questions of apartheid, colonization, and occupation. The issue of apartheid is one of the most difficult. I hear well what has been said about this apartheid in relation to certain notions of suicide. That is very interesting. But today, the question of apartheid is the question that brings the most contradictions in the mobilization and the support. For many people, there is no regime, there is no apartheid like in South Africa, and nevertheless, there is still not a normalized regime of trademark of apartheid, but there are elements that allow us to characterize the Israeli regime as a regime of apartheid. And I think the two questions that which the state of Israel is the most mobilized today are the questions of the economical boycott and the question of apartheid. The question of colonization is also very important, because we must see the way in which colonization works in Palestine. It allows us to understand that it's a military theory of colonization that builds the territory. At the beginning, the colonization was the implantation of colonies surrounded by Palestinian villages. But in only a few years, about 10, the law of the territorial continuity transformed colonization. It is Palestinian villages surrounded by colonies. Occupation is the army is at the avant-garde of a new military strategy that tries how to do the war from the of the strong to the weak, and the Israeli army has explored this kind of war. You know that, for example, it's the Israelis that learned, that taught the Americans from a military point of view, that when you go into a village, you shouldn't go in through the doors. You need to destroy the walls. So that is I would like to talk about the third question. That's what happened, is the centrality of what happens in Palestine. because the Palestinian question puts in evidence several strategic questions of the world situation. The first, one of the unfinished decolonization of Palestine, which is the most emblematic example of unfinished decolonization. And it is today a new situation, and it is one of the recolonization that goes through land grabbing and the control of raw materials. And Palestine is the example for many people. That's what we saw during the World Social Forums. Pierre organized a Palestinian tent that showed how in Africa we understood very well what land grabbing meant and what raw materials meant and of natural resources. The second question is the geopolitical dimension of the global crisis. With the decline of the West, and from this perspective, this is very important because the important questions develop, the big ideas develop at the level of geocultural regions. We saw the evolution of Latin America. But what happens in the Middle East is today something fundamental that still hasn't made evident the potential futures. And notably, the evolution of the Middle East, of the Mashrek. Today brings up the an important question to Israel. If Israel continues to think that its future is with the United States and Europe and abandons the idea of integration in the region as it is going to be developed, there the future of Israel is at risk. The third dimension is on the question of apartheid. And it is that there is an evolution of the notion of apartheid on a global level. We talk about today about global apartheid because the idea of apartheid, that it is fair to award a separate development, that each one can be pure ethnically in its territory, is a construction of history. And it's a base of segregation in the world. The world is going to would be covered of walls by which the rich protect themselves against the poor. And that notion of apartheid is what needs to be questioned fundamentally. There's another question, the last one, or before last that I will develop. It is that the BDS campaign allows us to see today the question of international law that was repeated several times. International law cannot survive with the idea of two ways, two measures. If certain benefit from impunity, there cannot be international law. But there's also the question, another question today, about international law. The BDS campaign was attacked, and the appellate court in Paris pretends today that the boycott is illegal. Why? Because it would bring economic discrimination against products and companies. So there are more and more laws that directly challenge the boycott because it doesn't correspond to the neoliberal ideal financed. That means that the battle for the international law is the one that started in 1979 and that gave birth to the World Social Forum. Law must be subordinate to business law. To business law is not right. The struggle of the Palestinian people reveals something, and it's the social civil society and the movement have already taken the sentence of this tribunal, the one of Barcelona or Cape Town or London. And now it is about reinforcing mobilization against the colonization, against occupation, against the wall, for the right of return of the refugees and the, against discrimination in the world, in Palestine and around the world.
A few minutes for questions. Cynthia, I want to begin with a question, and then I think Mireille, and then Cynthia. I appreciated your emphasis on movements in relation to civil society, international civil society. And you evoked briefly the part that feminist movements have played or can play. And I'm really sorry that we're now ending, because it seems that particularly since we are addressing the question of U.S. and U.N. complicity in supporting Israel, the policies of Israel, that we should perhaps talk about what the labor movement might do, or what feminist movements might be able to contribute, or what LGBT movements or anti-racist movements or movements against the prison industrial complex and mass incarceration. So I'm hoping that we continue these discussions and think very specifically about the role that social movements might play. And so, yes, let's see, Cynthia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to figure out how to put this. On the right, well, we have many political parties in the United States. On the right side of the spectrum, we have smaller parties that call for decreasing the budget of the Pentagon and ending U.S. involvement in all wars. Others of them say, close the bases and bring our young men and women who are soldiers home. On the more progressive side of the political spectrum, we have smaller political parties that say, in addition to those other items that they are in agreement on the right, they also say, put human rights first in as the motivation for U.S. foreign policy, and create a Department of Peace, perhaps using the current Department of State, turn it into a Department of Peace. Now, what I'd like for you to imagine is if the voters of the United States, the majority of them, cast their votes either right or left for political parties that have such a call, how would that, in your opinion, affect the Palestinian struggle?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, all these questions affect Palestinian movement because United States has a dominant position. So the Palestinians are aware of this. But in fact, I think that the position of the movement, the Palestinian movements, is to say we have to reinforce ourselves. This is the first condition. And then we could negotiate. Because the question is to negotiate. If you can negotiate, it means that you are in a situation of balance of power. If not, you can accept or refuse. But it is a testimony, it's not a resistance. So I think this is the main point. So I think that it's the duty of the U.S. movement to increase their position. And they had to do it, of course. And it is the problem of the United States society. There is a wonderful book written by Emmanuel Wallerstein. The name of the book is Imperialism Européen, and he say European imperialism, that means Occidental imperialism, and the subtitle is From Colonization to Intervention Rights, droit d'ingérence, to the right to intervene. And he say in this that the question is the question of the decline of the hegemony, not of the direction, not of the power, but of the hegemony. And so we are in this situation. So I think that the question is a question of alliance between movements and not of help from the movement of the North to the movement of the South.
Thank you for your presentation. I have been coming to America over 100 times, and I love the American people, and particularly the activists. But what really is sad to me is that when American people, professors and people who know what's going on, say to me, they're afraid of their own government. I wonder, does the American leadership know their own people are afraid of them? When America brought in the war, or policy of war on terrorism, this really worked out as war on men, women, and children, dropping drones in Pakistan, Afghanistan. It really played out as war against anyone who disagreed with America policy and Israeli policy. It played out as war against the Muslim world. It's very hard to be a Muslim and try to get through the airport in New York. Is there the fact that the Magna Carta, the American Constitution, the beautiful American Constitution, and remember that Eleanor Roosevelt, and it was Americans, put the input into that and led the world on the whole question of law and international rights. America done that and give real leadership. Now people around the world are afraid of America, disappointed in America, and angry that America is so bullish and arrogant, as is Israel, to think that they control the human family. My question is, how do we change this to call back our American and our Israeli brothers and sisters to recognize we're on a road to a third world war if we stay on this? And what is the role of the media in doing this? Now, we know people like Julian Assange, Bradley Manning, are being punished as examples to stay quiet. But this happens to you. We know this is what this is about. And it's to the disgrace of the media who have not stood up for the like of Julian Assange and the right for journalists to tell the truth. If we don't have that, what have we got? My question to you is, how do we, as the human family, as civil community, say to our media and to our leaders, tell the truth, because it's all we've got, and truth is power.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if it is a question. What I would say is that, in fact, happily, There is no predetermination in the story of nation. So many things depend of the activist and of the contradictions. And I think that we are in a period where contradiction will grow, because the crisis is at its beginning. And it's not only a financial question, crisis. It's an economic crisis, social crisis, ecological crisis, ideological crisis, geopolitical crisis. So many things will happen. It depends of what will be the proposal for the media, of course. But I remember that during the war of Vietnam, the movement for peace of Vietnam, they deal with media. And they arrive to develop the movements instead of the media. And they arrive also, I remember some of the people who were working in the movement, in the anti-war Vietnam movement, they told me, you know, the media, in fact, if you have a real action, they have to speak of you. Of course, they will not speak well of you, but people are not stupid. They can traduce. So the question is not to control media. The question is to open contradiction and to have a political struggle, including with the media. I think, well, it's not really an answer, I'm sorry, but...
There is one more question up here. Is it possible to take the very last question? Can you be very brief, Ronnie?
I will be very brief.
Thanks for your input. And I'm not too sure, though, from your input, how you see international coordination. You referred to the World Socialist Forum, and perhaps you're indicating that could be the vehicle. I'm not sure, because the World Socialist Forum has a long agenda. You see, the efficacy of the anti-apartheid movement of South Africa was there was one dedicated world movement that started in different countries. There was no command center as such, but it was this vast umbrella that brought the contingents all over the world together in country form, and then within the countries, the different forces, social forces and so on, from the trade unions to the churches, to there was an organization for the freedom for South African political prisoners, which had developed and came under this, for women, for the youth, sport, academic peoples and so on, but all came together. Which seems to me, BDS is beginning to create something of that nature. But it seems to me, in looking at the way ahead, and I'd like to ask you how you see it, that what is so vital is that we're able to create that unifying umbrella, all marching to the same tune.
Well, it's the project and the hope. That means it is the project. That means that the BDS campaign renew the solidarity movement. One of the reasons is that the BDS campaign starts from Palestine. I saw that there is a book of Omar Barghouti on the table explaining why the BDS campaign was important. And so I remember the anti-apartheid movement in the world. Many of us participate to this. One of the conditions was the resistance in South Africa, the political resistance in South Africa. And for this, the movement, the solidarity movement, has not to think, who am I supporting? I support the struggle of South Africa, South African people, against apartheid. I hope that the BDS movement will be able to build something like this, unified, that does not mean homogeneous, of course, in the world.